Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 272. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, who's battling the illness. This is his Jordan flu game, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, how's it going, bud?
Not 80-grade voice today, so I'm not going to talk very much because the flu's been in my household. I didn't get it bad. My voice got it really bad. It's got everything in the throat and the chest, congestion. Yeah, I'm going to shut up and let y'all do the talking, so we have a good guest that can break all this down much better than I can today.
Hey, no, even with a 60% voice, like, that's better than most people's voices in general. You always got the Southern charm, the Matthew McConaughey thing going on there.
I feel fine. I just don't have a voice at this point. So it's just, I don't know what's going on, but it needs to get back. Because when you have to talk on a microphone, this is not right. Okay.
That was like I was saying before we hit record, like about a year or so ago, people remember this. Like, my voice was completely shot for an episode or two. And like, I wasn't sick at all. My voice was just gone. So I sounded like absolute crap for an episode or two, but we do have a great guest here as we wrap up our dynasty and prospect ranking series with our dynasty relief pitcher ranking, saving the best for last. And our guest is definitely one of the best at covering relief pitchers. He is a writer at Fantrax, Rotoballer, and Nine Inning Know-It-All. So we got a trio of Rotoballer writers on this podcast. And he's also on the Fantasy Baseball Beat podcast on the Triple Play Fantasy Network, our good friend, Mr. Mike Carter. Mike, how are you doing, man?
It's February. There's more light coming. We got pitchers and catchers reporting in about 10 days. I'm doing pretty good for an old fat guy in the Midwest. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, it's not dark until, what, 5:30 now, which is good. It's not great, but it's better than 420. Get out of work. It's already dark out. That's very, I hate it. No baseball. It's dark out early. Middle winter stinks. But yeah, we're getting closer, man. You can almost like, you smell the hot dogs, hear the pop of the mitt, hear the crack of the bat. It's getting closer. We got spring training coming up here in another week or so. College baseball starting up soon too. It's a fun time of year. January was the last month without any baseball until November or whatever. So I love that. And again, trio of Rotoballer writers here. Rotoballer, you know, is a great site, a lot of great content, podcasts, tools, video, like everything you can need to help you this fantasy season. Use code TOOLSHED to get 10% off any premium package, even if you want to do, you know, basketball, football, whatever you want. Obviously, baseball right now is the hot ticket. So again, 10% off using code TOOLSHED at rotoballer.com. Let's hop into everything here, Mike. And before I get into our rankings here, let's just start with, or with our first question for you on the show outline. When you're looking at relievers, looking how to value them, you know, kind of what goes into that for you? What stats, what metrics do you look at? And how much do you weigh, like, team context against skill set? What's that whole process look like for you?
Yeah, for me, there's other guys that are a little bit more sophisticated than I am that have a little more time on their hands sometimes maybe to look at these things. But the things that really jump out at me when I'm doing it is, especially in the wintertime, I spend a lot of time on Roster Resource just grinding through what they're seeing, what they're thinking about. But I love the K-minus walk, and that's a relatively new thing for me in the last couple of years. I didn't really look at that too often. To me, that's a really good metric because it allows you to see who's going to help you get those high volume of strikeouts that you're looking for and minimize damage, right? We all want to do that. We don't want relievers that are going to come in and hurt our precious ratios and destroy those things that we work so hard to build. And so K-minus walk is really big for me. We're looking at things that somebody that's got an over 20 difference there, I think, is a good starting point for me a lot of the time. I also really do to look at K rates and swinging strikes and whiff rates and stuff like that. To me, those are really helpful in me thinking about how I look at closers. Because what I really have learned, and actually I learned a lot of this from you guys and how you guys play and listen and you guys talk about it, is I don't fall in love with any guy. Like, I don't have to have Edwin Diaz to feel like I've got a really good shot at earning a lot of saves. I look at them in tiers, and if I can get a couple of guys in the places where I want them to be, and then maybe somebody that falls to me later on, depending on what kind of draft you're in. Obviously, we always say that it's really important. If you're in a draft and hold, your philosophy and strategy is going to be different than if you're in redraft or a place where you might be able to use fab to be able to get things that you're looking for. But I think what we see is that bullpens are becoming more and more volatile, and relief pitchers are used more than they've ever been used before. And we're seeing a really higher proliferation of guys getting saves. Last year, there were almost 300 different guys in major leagues that had saves. And so trying to figure out how that breaks out and how you want to attack it for your team and what guys are going to get those is a really important piece of this, because we all know that in competitive leagues, you cannot punt on saves. If you're a family league or something of that nature, and you might be able to punt on that, that's fine. You can give that a shot. But in the leagues that we're playing in, the Earth Leagues and TGFBI and the NFBC, you can't punt on anything. So yep. I really like to start there. I look at the K-minus walk. I look at the K-rate. I look at the whiff. I look at the swinging strike. And it's not real scientific for me. And then the one thing that I do probably more than anybody I know is read box scores voraciously. Every morning before I go to work at school, I will take a look at the box scores from the night before, because what I'm really looking at there, it's not who got four hits. I'm looking at the usage patterns in the bullpen. Managers say a lot of things, as you guys know better than I do. They say a lot of things. It's their actions that really tell the tale. So we have to really pay attention to that stuff. And I find that to be really helpful, because what that might allow me to do is to spy a guy maybe a week or two before my competitors do. And then I can look at acquiring that guy with a fab bid, or however you can acquire them in your league. So long story short, it's not super scientific, but it seems to work fairly well for me.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to do it. And yeah, K-minus walk rate, absolutely, is very important. It's simple, but it's very important when looking even at starting pitchers too. It doesn't matter what starters, relievers, very important ratio. I think once it was, yeah, rates and barrels did a pitching metric draft about, maybe, I think it was over a year ago, a year or two ago. And I think the number one pick was K-minus walk rate. and I think took the number one, and obviously being one of the best pitching minds in the entire world.
Took
that number one. Or is it number one, number two? I can't remember, but it was definitely top two. I know that for a fact. So yeah, absolutely a very important metric. And I was just pulling that up while you were talking about that. So for these are just relievers with at least 30 innings last year. There were two that were just head and shoulders above the rest in strikeout minus walk rate. So we'll go 10 to 1 here. 10 was Devin Williams, 25.5%. 9 has Nick Pivetta in here, who was a reliever. We'll include him. He was like half and half. 9 was Nick Pivetta, 25.8. Tanner Scott, 26.1. Pete Fairbanks, 26.1. Alvarado, 26.7. AJ Puck and Aroldis Chapman, 26.9. Third was Trevor McGill from the Brewers, 27.7. Second was Robert Stevenson at 30.4, so almost a 3-point jump there. And then in first by 5 percentage points, guy that probably would be the number one reliever this year if he wasn't out for the entire year, unfortunately, Felix Bautista from the Baltimore Orioles. He's at 35.4%, which
that's
is
insane.
He had a 46.4% K rate, which was first by 5 percentage points over Chapman, and had an 11% walk rate. And also a 148 ERA, 0.92 whip, 144 batting average against. He was just absolutely unhittable. And I had him in a couple leagues, so kind of stinks that we won't get him at all this year. But that just goes, shows you some of the leaders in there. And Trevor McGill, kind of a sneaky name in there as well. He's not in the safest picture right now, but they trade Devin Williams. I don't know. It's a few interesting guys in that Milwaukee bullpen. Him, Abreu Ribe is absolutely filthy. Yeah, if they trade Williams, who knows? One of those guys could get a shot there for sure. But, Chris, did you have anything to add in terms of how you evaluate relievers for Dynasty here?
Most of the Dynasty leagues I'm in are saves and holds. That's the generic format. I've shifted some of my startups to be like saves and holds times a third. Basically, there's still value within saves. Because I think that when you do straight saves holds, it diminishes the value of closers completely. At least for me, I just punt it and get the elite ratio guys. But with the saves and holds times two or holds times half or times third, then there is some value. But in general sense, I tend to wait in a dynasty. In a redraft, I'm hammering closer early. Just a completely different game. Because in dynasty, you just pick up and churn. Or you can get the later guys that do provide value. But in a redraft setting where saves are so valuable, you have to pounce early, especially in the formats you mentioned. So I always try to get like a tier one closer. And then I get another kind of closer that is locked in for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And especially in Dynasty, the turnover is so vast. Like I'd be willing to say it's hard to even say that out of the 30 guys now, because it's not 30 guys. Yeah. How many teams, Mike, do you think there's one guy right now? Like maybe 12 to 15, a little under half, have like that one guy right now. Is that fair?
Yeah. I would say that's probably fair. And we always know that there's going to be that turnover and the turmoil, whether that be ineffectiveness or whether it be injury or manager decision. Yeah. Last time I checked, I was about 13. I felt, okay, I think this guy's definitely the guy. And there's just not a lot of sure things out there right now in terms of who's going to have the job and keep it, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and just out of anybody that's in the saves mix right now, how many of them were in the saves mix 2 years ago, 4 years ago?
It's not many.
Yeah, not many. It's definitely like the Craig Kimbrels types that are like guys that have a lot of saves every year for a long period of time. Those guys are becoming more and more scarce as we move along. You mentioned, Mike, obviously bullpens are getting used differently now. Like, there's not always that one set guy. Like, back in when I was growing up getting into baseball, it was like, all right, this guy pitches the seventh, this guy pitches the eighth, this guy pitches the ninth, unless they've gone 3 days in a row. It was basically like you knew who was coming in what spots. But now that still is the case for a handful of teams, but not many of those teams anymore. But let's get into our rankings here, and we'll see what Mike thinks of them. Chris, so we're just doing top 20 Dynasty relievers here. So, Chris, who are your top 20 Dynasty relievers?
All right, so I have Emmanuel Clase at the top, followed by Josh Hader, Edwin Diaz, Devin Williams, and Jordan Romano. 6 through 10 is Andres Munoz, Rossell Iglesias, Johan Duran, Camilo Duvall, and Mason Miller. And then 11 through 15, Alexis Diaz, Robert Stevenson, David Bednar, Matt Brash, and Clay Holmes. And then 16 through 20 is Pete Fairbanks, Evan Phillips, Felix Bautista, Adbert Alzolay, and AJ Minter. again, you can tell us Dynasty slanted because a couple of the guys are Holds guys like AJ Minter.
Yep, exactly. Is David Bednar one of the more undervalued relievers in all of baseball? I mean, the guy's just so low. He's on Pittsburgh. Unless you're O'Neill Cruz, nobody gives a crap about Pittsburgh for the most part. But yeah, I like Bednar a lot. So mine, I go Devin Williams. I have the same top fours, slightly different order, or a different one and four. Two and three, I have the same. I have Devin Williams at one, Hader two, Diaz three, Class A four. I have Yoan Duran five, Kimi Lodovall six, Mason Miller at seven, Jordan Romano eight, David Bednar nine, Alexis Diaz 10. And then 11 through 15, Andres Munoz, Ryan Pressly, Felix Bautista, Ryan Helsley, and Evan Phillips. 16 to 20, Raisel Iglesias, who I might be too low on. I might have factored in his age a little too much, but Pete Fairbanks, Edbert Alzale, Clay Holmes, and Paul Sewald there at number 20. So let's go one name that both Chris and I have top 10. I was excited to see Chris had him top 10 too. I want to see your thoughts on Mason Miller as a reliever. Obviously, one of the top pitching prospects. Some people had him as like the top pitching prospect at some point last year. Obviously nasty stuff, but the smaller track record, injury issues. Reports are that they are moving him to the bullpen at least for 2024, probably longer. So how do you feel about Mason Miller as a reliever? You think he's a guy that's going to be, obviously health permitting, a guy that could be an annual kind of stud in the relief pitcher department?
Yeah, for sure. The stuff is there, as you point out. I think obviously, he's a little tough to predict because we don't know exactly what that role is going to be. David Force did say that they were going to put him in the bullpen. And I think what they really want to see is see him get some innings and obviously be healthy. The Oakland bullpen is a thing of wonder. It's actually probably better than the White Sox bullpen, which isn't saying much. But they've got some things there and some issues to look at. But you look at him and you say, is this guy going to be the closer? Is this a guy that they're going to use as a multiple inning reliever? Is this a guy that they're going to say he's going to pitch 20 pitches today, but then he needs 2 days off? So it's hard to predict, I think, exactly what we can get out of him. But there's some things that we do know. This guy has an incredible fastball, 47% whiff rate, and very small sample sizes that we're talking about here. He's got a great slider that he uses against righties. He's got a cutter that he's made some strides with against lefties. 27.3 K percentage last year. I think that actually could be higher given a role change and pitching out of the bullpen. So I think if he's really able to go out there and let loose and he's healthy, this is a guy that could have a significant amount of value that's probably not had a lot of helium yet on his draft price. I wouldn't imagine. I don't know what his ADP is right now. Team context hurts a little bit. I look at him and I think if he ends up being the closer, that he probably doesn't pitch every day. Maybe he could get you 15, 20 saves. I don't think he's going to get much more than that this year. However, if he continues to do well in that role and he can build off of that, then this could be a guy that could be a top tier, obviously in Dynasty, a top tier closer that you would want to have moving forward. So we'll have to see what happens. The pedigree's there. I'm not really sure what the production will be this year, but I think long-term, if he remains in the bullpen, you're looking at a guy that's got quite a bit of upside. Maybe not as much as Duran, but pretty close, I would say.
Yeah, that slider is absolutely filthy. One of the better sliders in baseball. 118 batting average against, 147 slugging, that 47% whiff rate that Mike mentioned. Yeah, and the fastball, obviously, sitting 98.3. Maybe that even ticks up a little bit as a full-time reliever. But obviously, that was a very good pitch for him as well. And the cutter did have a higher batting average against on it, 375, but no extra base hits and a lot of weak contact off, only 84.7 mile an hour EV allowed on that cutter. So a solid pitch there. And yeah, you look at, Chris and I mentioned this before, we hate to look at it, but it is fun. And we'll just say that it's fun. The similar pitchers to Mason Miller based on velocity and movement. This is a pretty fun list of Jacob deGrom, Spencer Strider, Luis Severino, Hunter Green, and Garrett Cole. So some pretty good names there for sure. And yeah, I do think he's going to be, again, health permitting, it's a real impact reliever, and especially in leagues that value holds in some way, because even if he's not a full-time guy, he'll be in the late innings getting some holds as well. But so maybe he's a bit more valuable there than just your saves only formats. But yeah, I think that 15 to 20 save mark is fair. Maybe he sneaks over into the low 20s. I don't think he's going to be like 30 plus or anything like that. Oakland might not even win 30 games this year. I can't. They'll win 30 games. But yeah, I do like Mason Miller a lot. I like him a lot more in the bullpen. I was fading him as a starter just because I didn't know what he would, how many innings he'd give you a year after year. But as a reliever, I like him definitely a bit more, especially in the short term here.
Yeah, and I think the other thing you got to think about, like, we talk about team context all the time, right? Even terrible teams are going to have probably 25 saves, right? So somebody's going to get those saves in Oakland. And depending on how you look at it and how they need to give them rest and whatnot, you got guys like Danny Jimenez and Lucas Irsig that could get some time in that role too that have been nasty in the past. It'll be interesting to see how they play that out. Even last year, Trevor May had 21 saves there, and they were pretty awful.
Right. Yeah, and like people that are like, oh, he's on a bad team. He's not going to get as many saves as some guy on a good team. Well, I counteract that with, yeah, they're a bad team, so that means they're probably going to win more games close, right? There's not going to be – like Oakland's not going to have a lot of like 10-2 blowout wins.
No.
They're probably winning by one or two runs more often than not. So that's kind of how I counteract that. Like, yeah, those games will be close because they are so bad. But
right.
Chris, what are your thoughts on Mason Miller?
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
Laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power. Loyalty. And luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
He can't handle a starter's workload. We've seen that. I think that the bullpen was the natural destination for him. And there was no questioning that he would be there. And I'm glad that they realized that and that they would, you know, they're moving forward with that. So I do think the skill set really plays. And I think that's his best fit. I think there's a chance he could end up one of the elite closers in the game as long as he stays healthy.
Yeah, absolutely the caveat with him. He has to stay healthy, and that has not happened so far. So we'll have to see. Can he even handle a full season as a reliever? That's still a question we have to answer, too, let alone a starter. But, yeah, the other name here, super elite and nasty. He's a guy that's been rising up rankings for a while now. That's Yoan Duran from the Minnesota Twins. You go to his Savant page, it is just littered with just dark red metrics here. Coming off a year where he had 27 saves for the Twins in 59 appearances, 2.45 ERA, a 32.9% K rate, 9.8% walk rate, and it was just, again, one of the best in the league in XBA, XLOG, all the expected metrics. Doesn't give up a lot of hard contact either. Probably one of the filthiest pitchers in the game, one of the most fun to watch. The four-seamer that he's got hitting triple digits at times, the curveball, the splinker, which is obviously just a fun word to say. I'll say splinker as much as I can. But obviously, then that one was used. Both the breaking pitch or both the off speeds, 27%-ish, and then the four-seamer about 45%. Actually, the average in the fourth team was 101.8. I didn't realize it was 101.8. I knew it was like triple digits, but 101.8 is just insane. Curveball, 159 batting average against with a 46% whiff rate. And the splinker, 26.8% whiff rate or splitter, whatever you want to call it. It's nasty. That's just what to say that. So he's a guy that's finally starting to get up there in terms of, you know, his ADP and his rankings as one of the more elite options in the game. And obviously, Chris and I have him both ranked in our top eight, me fifth, and Chris eighth. So what are your thoughts on Duran? Like, you know, Mike, do you think he's here to stay and he's joining the haters, the Diazes of the world in that kind of top tier of relievers?
Yes, absolutely. There's definitely everything that you want to see in a guy that's coming in the ninth inning. He's got, right. He's big. He's nasty. The splinker, whatever you want to call it, might be the filthiest pitch in baseball right now in the American League Central. Me being a Sox fan, I get to see him a lot, and I don't even know how you would approach going up there with a bat and trying to hit this guy. Everything you said was right on. The fastball velocity is 101.8, it's 100th percentile. You're just not going to get anything better than that. The thing that I really like about it, though, is that I think he's also got a really high ground ball percentage. It was at 66% last year, which is pretty absurd, and that's 99th percentile in that realm as well. And he doesn't really give up a lot of hard contact, as you said, and limits the exit velocity, which is in a way, it's almost counterintuitive because you would think a guy that throws that hard would have higher exit velocities, but guys just can't square him up. He's just too good. And so I think the Twins have finally taken the kid gloves off of him. I think that they're allowing him to be – he was splitting with Jorge Lopez, and they were – they've got a lot of good guys in that bullpen, too, backing him up. Rock Stewart and Thielbar and Griffin Jacks are guys that are really good, but they're going to turn him loose. And last year I think he had 23 saves, and he's going to have 30-plus this year. He's going to have great ratios. I think his K rate could even actually go up. 32.9 is great. No, don't get me wrong. He's got the kind of stuff that you could almost see like those Bautista, like video game numbers, if he really gets going. I love him. And the other thing that I think is really interesting too is sometimes when you look at those splits and you see the righty-lefty splits, he doesn't really have any. He's effective against everybody. So I think he's a top-tier guy. I definitely... And a lot of the leagues that I'm playing in, I have been pushed up into that top tier for me. The one guy that you guys were talking about that you're high on that I have a little concerned about is Hader. Just with the walk rate last year and showing some signs of some little dents in the armor. He's obviously gone to a great team concept with a great bullpen there in Houston. But you know, he's a guy that I'm shying away from. I think somebody will probably take him sooner than I would be willing to. But in most drafts, like you guys are talking about here, if I end up with, just for example, if I end up with like a Devin Williams and a Tanner Scott or something of that, who I know we're going to talk about, I would be thrilled with that. I don't need Diaz or Hader or one of those guys. I'd be happy with any of the guys that you guys just had on that list.
Yeah, Hader's an interesting one for sure because, yeah, the walk rate jumped from 9.6% to 13% last year. It was almost like he was like effectively wild in a way, though, because the barrel rate also plummeted and the exit velo went down, hard hit rate went down. But can he maintain that? I don't like that 13% walker. That's the highest of his career. He was at 12.8% back in the shortened 2020 year, but last 2 years he was 10.7 and 9.6, which aren't great, but you live with those with a guy like Josh Hader. Like, again, a guy that misses bats 30+% of the time for strikeouts, like you live with a 10-11% walk rate. But yeah, 13 is a bit worrisome. So I do share a little bit of that with you. Like, all right, is that start of a trend? Was that a 1 year thing? Let's see how he does in Houston this year. And obviously, everybody that's already drafted Ryan Pressly or have him in dynasty leagues, if there's no holds in your league, I'm sorry. But if there are still holds in your league some way, Pressly's still going to be a great target. So be one of the better relievers in the game. But Chris, what are your thoughts here on either Hader or Duran?
Yeah, I think that they're both profiles that should be solid for the foreseeable future. I don't really see Hader, like Mike mentioned, I think there are some concerns there to at least consider. But he's going to an organization that has done great things with arms.
Yep.
And I think where he should absolutely thrive, and I don't think the Astros would have gave him the contract that they did if they weren't confident. I'm still only 29. I think that if we see that walk rate regress back, then he's going to be the elite guy that he's always been. And they paid him closer money. He's going to be a closer as long as he's healthy for the term of the contract. So he has some good stability. And I believe Duran does too. There were those questions about Duran coming into 2023, like, would he just be in the high leverage spots or not? And he proved he could handle the ninth inning. And I don't see any reason that they don't continue to push him back out there to that spot moving forward.
Yeah, Mike was saying, I think he's going to be the guy this year. That's still a pretty good bullpen behind him, too. A lot of fun names there, too. But, yeah, definitely he's the guy, it looks like, this year, unquestioned, unless he's been used two or three nights in a row, something like that. But, yeah, I won't be surprised if fast forward a year and he's right up there, maybe even number one in relief pitcher ADP. I mean, I think that's the upside we're talking about here with Duran, definitely getting up there with Diaz, the Haters, the Williams, et cetera. Yeah, definitely one of my favorite relievers to watch, and that slinker is just – you'll see that on Pitching Ninja quite a few times this season, that is for sure. Let's go to a name a little bit further down that's not quite as sexy, but had a really good year, and I don't think he's getting enough love right now, and that's Tanner Scott from the Miami Marlins. That's a team that hasn't really had a guy there in that ninth inning role for a bit now. You see every year feels like there's a different leader in saves for that team. But Scott was, again, quietly one of the best relievers in all of baseball last year. In 74 games, 78 innings, he had a 2.31 ERA, 0.99 whip, and 104 strikeouts. That's a 33.9% strikeout rate, 7.6% walk rate. Again, he was in that top 10 that I mentioned earlier in the show for K minus walk rates. You know, everything seems to back it up here. Another savant page littered with red. All the expected metrics are very good. Doesn't give up a lot of hard contact as well. Only a 26.3% hard hit rate allowed. A four-seam slider guy, almost 50-50 split with those, and both are very good offerings. But is he a guy that you can see maintaining that, Mike? Is he a guy that he's still 29 years old? Mm-hmm. I thought he was older than 29, to be honest with you, but he's 29 years old, a guy that's been in the league for a few years now. Is he a late bloomer into this kind of elite rank of relievers? Do you think there's more upside to be had with him?
It's interesting, right? Because here's a guy that we've been waiting on for years to ascend to the value that he did last year in Miami, right? A guy who had a high prospect pedigree going in who could never really find it, could never really corral it. So all the things that you say are true. You look at the stat cast, it's blood red. The big difference for him last year really essentially was cutting the walk rate to a more manageable level. This is a guy that had when 21 had a 14.7% walk rate. In 22, it was even higher, 15.9 ERAs over four, really struggling with some of those things. Yet the K ability has always been there. He's always been a high K percentage type of guy. To me, I think the thing is, if he can keep those gains, the control gains and command gains that he had last year, he's definitely going to be a guy that could have a better season than what he had last year. The one thing that I think is important to point out about Scott, too, and I guess that's just how you interpret it, is that, you know, he had 12 saves last year because obviously they started off with A.J. Puck as their closer, and that went well enough for a period of time. And then he had some issues and they had to shut down for a little bit. And then Scott came into that role. But he had 12 saves last year. He had 9 of those in September when they were trying to push for a playoff spot at the end. 3 of his 9 wins were in September. 20 strikeouts to 1 walk in September. He was lights out in September, right? So the question is then, is he going to have that, maintain that same role going into this season? They're going to stretch out. They're saying they're stretching out A.J. Puck to go into the rotation, which I think is a disaster waiting to happen.
I don't believe that for a second. Like, why?
It doesn't make
a lot of sense. They have enough starters, too. It's weird. Like, it's not like they're like hurting for starters. They have, what other starters have some question marks about them, but we tried the starter route with Puck, and I don't think it's there. I think he's a reliever for sure.
Yeah, they have Nardi there too, who has some ability, I think, to be able to shut down people at the end of games too. So my thought process on it is, I don't really want Scott as my number one, but if I was speculating for a second closer, I'd be really happy to have him. Yep. My concern with Miami is that they trade him at some point because they have other options, and he maybe goes to a team where he doesn't end up closing but becomes a high leverage reliever in the 7th or 8th inning for a team that's in contention. And to me, that's where that context really ends up mattering, right? This stuff is absurd. It always has been. But if that walk rate goes back from what it was last year at 7.8% and goes back to 14 or 15, we got a whole different problem. Again, yeah. I think it depends here too. Are you in a league where if you take Scott, and it ends up being a mistake, can you address it? If you're in a draft and hold and you get him and you need saves and he doesn't get them, you got a problem.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And what makes me feel good, though, is like the other names you mentioned, the two other kind of bigger names in this pen are also both lefties. So
right.
All three of them are lefties. There's a big name righty in that pen that could steal time away. Yeah, I think we see 25 to 30 saves out of Tanner Scott this year. And yeah, I think it all hinges, like you mentioned, on that walk rate staying low. But even if it regresses to 9-10%, even a couple percentage points down, I think that's still fine. The stuff is there. That sinker, that four-seam slider combination, very good there. He even can miss bats. He has a higher whiff rate on the four-seamer, too. He's been above a 30% whiff rate on that four-seamer each of the last 2 years, which is nice to see as well. So nice two-pitch guy there. So, yeah, I'm pretty much in on Tanner Scott for sure, but in redraft and dynasty. Chris, do you share that same level of optimism with Tanner Scott?
Yeah, I don't have much to add, but he's an easy invest for me. I think he's a great opportunity cost right now.
And Mike, keeping it here on Miami real quick, A.J. Puck, we didn't have anyone on the sheet here, but he's a fun one, right? Like, do you still see any value out of Puck? Let's assume he's a reliever, because I think that's what's going to happen. is there any value in Puck? Do you think he's a guy that could, whether it's this year or even down the road, a guy that can pitch those high leverage innings, maybe get some saves eventually? Is there any value left to be had with AJ Puck?
Yeah, for sure. We talked about him when at first pitch. Rick Graham and I were doing a presentation, and he was a guy that we both had agreed on. You've got Puck was top 10 amongst relievers last year in Sierra, 2.66. His K minus walk was 27. His CSW percentage was 36.1. So he's definitely got some nasty stuff. I think the biggest problem for me with Puck has always been that nobody ever really knows what his role is. When they let him close, he did a pretty good job there for a while. And of course, he's going to run into some issues. Every reliever does. Every pitcher does runs into some issues. I wish they would just leave him alone and give him a full season and see what he can do, because I do think that Scott is obviously the better play here based on the circumstances, and his stuff is incredible. But Puck could really do the job fairly easily if they would allow him to do it, I think.
Yeah, I still have some faith in Puck. I mean, it's funny, he's like the Mason Miller of 2-3 years ago. The top pitching prospect that was a starter that couldn't really, handle that workload. There were some injuries with Puck as well, but nasty stuff out of the pen. So I kind of wonder if Mason Miller will follow that similar path. But yeah, Puck still has some value for sure. Just in if you get holds leagues, yeah, I like him a lot there. So he'll probably get a decent amount of holds this year, assuming they aren't actually serious with the whole starter thing, which I still don't believe, but who knows? Crazy things have happened. The Red Sox tried to make Daniel Bard a starter back when he was one of the best setup men in the game and the heir apparent to Papelbon. So it's happened before and usually doesn't go well. But we
a lot
shall
of that
see.
Has to do with ego, right? You got pitchers that want to be starters that say that they want to be starters. And I think teams say that to them and say, oh, yeah, you can come in. We'll let you stretch out as a starter. The White Sox are apparently trying to do that with Garrett Crochet, which is probably not the best idea either when he's got 2.5 pitches maybe. Yeah, and still developing that. The only thing I could see with that would work would be if they maybe flip Kopech back to the bullpen and let Crochet start. But yeah, they're in deep trouble.
Yeah, Crochet is another one that's I just don't see. He's got good stuff from the left side. So definitely I think he could be a bullpen guy. But hey, since you're a White Sox fan, again, not something we had on the sheet, but what are your thoughts here? Obviously they made that trade sending Gregory Santos over to the Seattle Mariners, got back Prelander Barroa and Zach DeLoach. So how do you see that White Sox bullpen shaking out now? It looks like maybe at least for this year, Brebbia is the guy. Do you think he is the guy? Do you think Barroa maybe sneaks in at some point into that role, or even maybe Garrett Crochet? So how do you see that White Sox bullpen shaking out?
Yeah, I think they got a lot for Santos, in my opinion. I know you guys are the prospect guys and know far more about it than I do, but I don't really think Santos is a closer on a decent team. As a middle relief guy who's been besieged with arm troubles, and he's actually got an elbow problem right now. He might not be ready to go for the start of the season. They've been nursing him through that. He's a decent guy to have. I think he'll fit in that Topa role. Justin Topa's role in Seattle would be my guess, that he fills that role. But Barroa is an interesting guy, and I know a lot of the pitching people that we all really know and love like him a lot. And I think that he's a guy that they'll probably use in the bullpen initially. I don't see them using him as a starter. He's got high velo, big K arm. Same thing he's got same problems with is control and command. The walk rate's a little bit high. He's 23. I think it's a good get for them. I don't know if they'll slot him in as closer right away. My guess would be at this point that it's probably Brebbia just based on experience. I also think that there's a possibility that the Sox would do something weird too and sign a veteran sort of off the scrap heap. If you think of, I'm just throwing a name out here and you'll laugh at me if being a Red Sox fan, but like Matt Barnes or somebody like that who has experience doing it, that doesn't cost them any money, that they could flip at the deadline. I could see the Sox doing something like that too. But Barroa is definitely an interesting name. When I saw that trade, I thought, whoa, my first instinct was to text you, because it felt to me like they got a lot for a guy that I didn't really have high hopes for as a closer.
Yeah, no, I think they did well. I think DeLoach still has some value, and that outfield he gets some time there. And obviously they got Dominic Fletcher as well. So a couple new pieces to maybe try on the outfield to go along with Colas and obviously Luis Robert and Benny Benintendi out there. But yeah, I thought the deal was fine. And Santos is he's okay. I don't think no one's gonna lose sleep over losing Gregory Santos, but especially with the direction the White Sox are going, obviously in a rebuild right now, trying to get some more young pieces. I don't think Santos is a guy that you
we're going to have on that team in a couple of years anyway. So you know, get the young outfielder, get the young reliever. And yeah, Baroa's, he's got some good stuff. Obviously, he's another guy that just has a hard time commanding it and it's been pretty inconsistent. But if they're able to harness him, at least to some degree, maybe he's not a closer, but he could be a guy that's pitching high leverage innings at some point, and maybe even later this year. This year with, like I said, there's not really a lot of options ahead of him. So if some of those guys like Brebbia and others falter a bit, yeah, I think we could see Baroa take into some seventh, eighth inning, maybe get some holds this year for sure. Chris, what are your thoughts on the White Sox bullpen?
Great question. I will say that the trade was awesome. I don't know. Santos is fine, but I like Baroa, I think, straight up. So I thought the White Sox came out really well in that deal. I will say I didn't like the Sox stealing Christian Mayno on the opposite end to Arizona, but different story. Yeah, the Sox bullpen's interesting. I have no clue how it shakes out. I think that Garrett Crochet may be the better arm in that pen. We'll see. They said they're going to stretch him out. I think he's not a starter. I don't see any way that he can be, but you know, it'll be interesting. I'm no clue how that bullpen works itself out.
Yeah, because in that bullpen, the only other lefties are Tim Hill, who wasn't really that good, not a guy that misses bats, and then Shane Drouin, former Red Sox prospect that's gotten the Rule 5 draft a couple months ago, and I don't have high hopes for him as well. At least that's projected on roster resource. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Garrett Crochet has definitely a chance to get in some high leverage innings. And yeah, similar to Puck, I don't see him. You know, I don't think either of those two guys are going to be relievers, starters. But again, we shall see how spring training unfolds here over the next 2 months or so leading up to opening day. All right, a couple more questions here for Mr. Carter. Who are some of your favorite names to target in saves, leagues that value saves and holds some degree here? And obviously, these are guys that probably if in a standard saves only league don't have a ton of value, but who are some of your favorite names that get like a nice significant boost in leagues that value holds?
Sure. I think starting off, we have to talk about Matt Brash in Seattle for sure. He's a guy that I think could actually sneak into quite a few save opportunities actually in Seattle based on how Scott Service uses the bullpen. There's definitely a lot of scenarios where Munoz is never healthy either. He's had struggles with that his whole career.
Yep.
Should he be unhealthy, Brash would be their top guy, clearly, even though they just got Santos. Brash is way better than Santos. I think Brash could easily get into double-digit saves. He's going to easily have over 20 holds. Definitely a guy that I would be looking at. A high K rate, a really good source of Ks, get some vulture wins there for you, and possibly some saves, I think, as well. Another guy that I've long been in love with, Brian Abreu. I know that Hader and Presley and Houston are going to get the accolades and the press, but this is a guy with a 39.8% whiff rate. This is a guy that's his stuff plus is off the charts, as Eno points out on Rates and Barrels. Just a really great guy to tie in as well. They will get a lot of holds, I believe. A couple other guys, just going through them quickly, Jeff Hoffman in Philadelphia, is another guy. That Philadelphia bullpen is, I don't know that I'd buy any of that in terms of Alvarado is going to be the closer, sure, but they've got four guys that legitimately can lay claim to closing out games or getting opportunities. We know that Rob Thompson is not afraid to use any of those guys in tough situations. Matt Strom is another one there, obviously. Soto, Sir Anthony Dominguez did not have a good year last year, but he's always been a pretty reliable guy. We talked about Puck and Nardi already. Those are guys that I think have a high amount of value. Obviously, Eric Swanson in Toronto is a guy that, should anything happen to Romano, who's got the bulky back, Swanson could be there. Another name there that I would not sleep on is Nate Pearson. I think a lot of people are forgetting about him, and there's another guy that could end up getting some saves and also holds as well. Griffin Jackson, Thielbar in Minnesota. Griffin Jackson had a 32.4% CSW last year. He's a really good arm. And going down to, obviously, to Tampa with Pete Fairbanks, he's never thrown more than 45 innings in a year, and people make a lot of that, and I think that's really an important thing. He's got some injury issues. He has that rainout syndrome, which makes it really hard for him to pitch in cold weather. I know somebody who has that. It's a really difficult thing to navigate when you can't feel your fingers, especially if you're trying to pitch. So Jason Adam there, I think, would be a great handcuff if you're looking for somebody to get into that situation there. And then finally, I think to me, looking at St. Louis, Helsley's great when he's healthy, but boy, that's a huge if there. I really like the under the radar move of getting Kittredge there. I think Kittredge is a guy that's going to slot in real good there in St. Louis and get a lot of holds. And he's got closing experience too in Tampa. If they need that, people forget he was hurt last year, but the year before he was an all-star. Definitely some guys there that you can be taking a look at that would give you some value. And the thing that I always say about, I always champion the middle relievers, right? Because there's a lot of people out there that are playing fantasy baseball who will take a crappy fifth starter from a crappy team instead of taking one of these type of middle relief guys that might be able to help them with their ratios and maybe get them 100 strikeouts or thereabouts. I'd way rather have that and a chance for some saves potentially than to have Tuki Toussaint or somebody on my roster, God forbid. But I think that they always say that because I think it's a really important place to consider that there's pockets of value that are hidden in there that are staring right at you and that people miss.
Oh, absolutely. That's the strategy I've tried myself. I definitely agree with you there. I love a lot of those names. I'll just throw two in real quickly here. One I mentioned earlier, Abner Uribe.
Yes.
I love Abner Uribe. This guy is so incredibly nasty. You look at predominantly sinker slider, does have an occasional four-seamer as well. But sinker, 99.4 miles an hour on average, and then the slider, 10 miles an hour, less than that, at 89.4 miles an hour. And look at the metrics here on the slider. Yeah, it was only 30 innings, not a huge sample size, but 0.80 batting average against, a 160 slug allowed, and 58.1% whiff rate. Another guy that can get ground balls as well, 54% ground ball rate. Again, if Devin Williams gets hurt or is traded or whatever, yeah, I think Uribe is, even in holds leagues, yeah, he's obviously going to be one of the guys pitching a lot of the seventh and eighth innings in front of Williams. Love Uribe a lot. And then a guy we've mentioned on the show a couple of times in the past, not this episode, but Ryan Kirkering in that Phillies bullpen that you mentioned, Mike. And yeah, he's a bit buried at the moment. So I'm even a guy that gets you like a ton of holds this year. But look at what he did last year in the minor leagues across four different levels. In 53 and two-thirds innings, 151 ERA, 0.89 whip, and then 79 Ks to 12 walks. That's a 32.2% K minus walk rate. So very good stuff there with Kirkering. He's got the sweeper sinker mix there. And it's funny, in his limited time, only three innings, but he threw the sweeper 85% of the time, which is just ridiculous. Obviously, that's probably not going to be that high of a usage rate in the major over a full season, but really get that really good mix of high 90s sinker and that mid 80s sweeper. Two pitches going completely opposite ways. So I think he could eventually work his way into some high leverage roles there.
Absolutely.
Chris, what do you think? What are your thoughts on these names we've already mentioned, or do you have any other names to add to this?
Kirkering is certainly one that I'm way in on. I'd like to invest in him. James MacArthur with the Kansas City Royals is a fun one as well. I think John McMillan, another Royals guy, so I don't know how that shakes out, but both those guys in KC have opportunities. I think that those are the kind of names to get in on, especially in a dynasty league. I guess the prices could soar, but you can find like the next, like Matt Brash's or the next. I remember when Emmanuel Clase was like a prospect and he was getting buzz in Texas. The other guys, Emiliano Teodo in Texas, we saw him at Fall Stars. He was really erratic, but I've seen him other times. He's absolutely
electric, is right.
Yeah, we got the full experience. He didn't allow a run in 11 innings in the fall league before that outing. He only walked like, I think he allowed a total of five base runners over 11 innings with 22 Ks or something absurd like that. He pitched as a starter throughout the regular season when I saw him several times, but he's going to be probably a reliever most likely. He's 102 on the fastball. He's 94 on the change, which is crazy. And a 90-mile-an-hour slider. So, like, he's somebody I think you should get in on pretty early if you can.
I love seeing all these pitchers that are throwing, like, the harder changeups nowadays. Because Felix Hernandez was, like, the first dude that I can recall doing that. Remember him? He was out there throwing, like, 89, 90-mile-an-hour changeups. I was like, man, like, what is this? And it was working for him, obviously. He was one of the best pitchers in the game for 6, 7, 8 years or even more. But now a lot of guys are throwing those harder changeups and fun to see. But yeah, Teodo was an experience. That's the perfect way to – that's what I even tweeted, that the Teodo experience, because in that inning in the Fall Stars game, he didn't give up a hit, but gave up a run, two walks, two hit batters, and two wild pitches. Only 13 of 28 pitches for strikes. But
I was at that game too, and I was like, he came out there the first three or four pitches. So who is this guy? That is insane. Yep. It looked like he was throwing seeds at people up there. So – Those are all good ones. Another guy that I missed, and I can't believe I missed this, Chris, on your Braves is Minter, AJ Minter. If anything should happen to Iglesias, you can make an argument. I think he's got another year or two in him that he'll be pretty good still. But Minter would be a guy that could obviously step in. He had 10 saves last year and over 20 holds as well when Iglesias wasn't available. So I think that's definitely a guy to look at too. As we wrap up our conversation here, another guy that I absolutely love, and I think everyone is having rise up their boards right now too, is Robert Stevenson. Obviously, we talked about him a little earlier. He had an insane season. And when you unpack that and realize that his competition is Carlos Estevez, I don't know how long that's going to last. But that's definitely a guy that you want to get in on. He's uncovered a new level.
Yeah, he was absolutely dominant the second half of last year. Was really fun to watch. And yeah, I think he's going to be definitely a guy rising up rankings a lot this year and moving forward. If he can get some saves in there, that'd be great. Mike, we might have already touched on all the names here, but any other names you think are going to set the kind of rise up rankings this year that we haven't already covered yet?
No, there's always the chance that you got some of these guys that sort of sneak in. I think I've been hearing some people have been asking me about Josh Spores in Texas. I think people get the recency bias of seeing him in the World Series, getting the last out in the World Series, and start thinking that maybe he's the guy. They just signed David Robertson. They also have Kirby Yates there. So I think that's a little bit of an uphill climb there for him. We talked about Philadelphia. In the north side of Chicago here, Edward Alzolay is looking like he's going to be the closer. But Julian Merriweather was a guy who was really effective for the Cubs last year, too, and could step into that role. I know Hector Neris is there, too, but he profiles a little bit better as a guy for holds. And Neris is a guy that almost always the last 3 years has had over 20 holds and is a guy that you look at and you like. You talked about Abner Uribe. Trevor McGill was another name in that Milwaukee bullpen that could be. Yep. He was fantastic when we saw him in September up in Milwaukee. Wow, it was really impressive. The velocity was there. Obviously, over 99 miles an hour on the velocity, 35.1% strikeout rate. So there's definitely a guy there that you can look at. And Arizona's got Seawald, and he gets by more on being deft than he does on pure stuff. And Kevin Ginkle was crazy good in the playoffs as well. So there's definitely guys out there. The San Diego bullpen is one that's interesting. Roster Resource right now lists Robert Suarez as a closer, but they did spend a considerable amount of money to bring in Yuki Matsui and Usagu. My buddy Tim McLeod telling me about those guys. He's really high on Matsui. So we'll have to see how that all plays out. That's what spring training's for. So we take a look at all these guys and see where they're at. But it's funny, isn't it? You think we start talking about closers at the front end of the show, and then we end up talking about all these other guys that could get opportunities. So for those of you that are getting ready to draft, keeping track of some of these guys and earmarking some guys that might get some opportunities is a really important part of the preparation as well.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I find it funny with San Diego. Oh, we're not going to be able to afford Soto. Let's trade him. And then it's like, let's go out and spend all this money on two relievers from overseas. It was just kind of weird path for them this offseason. But another name I wanted to throw out there real quick is he's technically a starter now, but I still don't think he's going to be a starter long term. That's Tanner Houck from my Boston Red Sox. I think he's just the number five guy right now because there's not any other options. And if they go out and get another starter, probably not. Or when there's more guys for that rotation, I do think he's a reliever long term. And I've shifted my thought process to that. Like obviously, the sinker, slider, splitter combination there. He can be nasty. We've seen it, but just couldn't turn a lineup over multiple times. So I've always thought, man, this guy could be pretty fun in the bullpen. And there's been talk maybe trading Jansen at some point, whether that happens now or at the deadline, we'll see. But yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if Houck ended up being a high leverage reliever at some point too. And he's very filthy, so I'm just keeping my radar and hoping he does transition over. I think he'll be more valuable as a reliever than a starter. But I think this gonna wrap us up though. Mike, thanks so much for joining us. Anybody that's following Mike, you can follow him on the Twitter at MDRC0508. I have that memorized too, which is fine. I don't even have your page up right now, but
it's a terrible Twitter handle.
That's fine. Like mine, everyone asks, what's the 04? And mine is yes, because I'm a Red Sox fan and they broke the curse in 04. There's no deeper meaning than that. But obviously, Mike's doing a great job over at Fantrax, over at Rotoballer now as well, and then some non fantasy stuff over at Nine Inning Know It All and on the Fantasy Baseball Beat podcast as well. Phenomenal podcast. Mike, thanks again for joining us tonight. It was really fun talking with you as usual.
Thanks for having me, guys. We go back a long way, and you guys have been outstanding people to me and to everyone else that you guys run across. And the reason why you guys always get the accolades that you do, and they are deserved, is because you two work harder than just about anybody in this industry, whatever you want to call this industry. You guys are constantly working, constantly putting out great content. And Eric, personally, I will always forever be indebted to you for helping me get on FanTrax and now at Rotoballer. I'm doing things that I really never thought that I would be doing 5 years ago. And so I'm having a blast doing it. I've met great people. I consider you guys not only mentors in the work that we do, but also friends. And that's what's most important about all the stuff that we do, is the friendships that we make and the connections that we make. And Chris, hope you're feeling better soon. And thank you guys so much for having me. I always love coming on with you guys and appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
Absolutely, yeah. Mike. And the feeling 100% mutual here. Absolutely. Again, follow Mike on Twitter or X, whatever. Follow all the great work he does at the sites he writes for. And that does wrap us up and wraps up our entire Dynasty and Prospect ranking series. It was a lot of fun saving out the closers. Closers come in and close out the series. We get a lot more fun content lined up. We're still doing the 3 episodes per week until opening day. And again, this is on the Rotoballer Network now. Toolshed code gets you 10% off any premium package, so go check that out. And we will be back with you again in a couple of days. But until then, everyone take care.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Lowe's knows that free makes everything better. That's why our rewards members get free standard shipping on the things they need and want, starting at Silver Key status every day. Savings for rewards members add up fast, so why wait? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help. You save. Not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/shipping terms. Subject to change.